Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Jessen, Judge Smith, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Please be seated.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date is January 30, 2019. This panel of the court is assembled in courtroom 100. We have six cases on today's calendar, four of which will be submitted with oral argument and two of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case for oral argument today is case number A18-436, State versus Zeferino Sanchez. Mr. Rivers,
yes.
you may approach and begin. I think you know our time allocations.
And I probably preface this by saying we won't use it all. Your Honor, this is a case where Mr. Zeferino entered an agreement to a stipulated facts trial. I realize my brief talks about Padilla and pleas, but what I'd like the court to recognize or at least address is that this stipulated facts trial was essentially the functional equivalent of a guilty plea. In what is really of most significance that I can see, when you look at the transcript of the plea, the waiver that's done on page four of the transcripts, the question by counsel is, and I'm jumping a little bit into the quotes, is that the results of this matter would be a stay of adjudication, 0 to 5 years probation, no jail time, yeah, no jail time, pre-sentence investigation, and follow the recommendations. You understand that, Mr. Zeferino Sanchez, correct? The answer is yes. If you're found guilty, you understand that would be the parameters of consequence. And he says yes. Nowhere in the colloquy are immigration consequences discussed. What's more is that the immigration, the consequences of the plea are limited solely to the what I just discussed, the stay of adjudication. And so it's assumed that the stipulated facts trial will result in essentially a guilty verdict.
So, Mr. Rivers, and I'm not sure that our precedent allows us to do much, even if this was the functional equivalent of a guilty plea, but one of the things that stood out to me was here was the affidavit saying that the victim here had recanted. So, I mean, we may have seen cases where you say, okay, there's just really only one reasonable thing this district court can do on a stipulated facts trial, but here there were differences. An alternative path saying she'd recanted. So shouldn't that make a difference to us? Even if we were able to accept your kind of invitation to make new law here.
Well, in what sense are you talking?
Well, you're saying this was the functional equivalent of a guilty plea, this stipulated facts trial.
Correct.
And what I'm saying is because there were some differences in what, because you have his police statement, right, which acknowledges some of these, but you also have an affidavit, as I recall, and you know this better than I do, so tell me if I'm wrong, an affidavit from defense counsel saying that the victim had recanted.
That's true, but in looking at the record that I have and that you have before you, it was preordained that this judge was going to find him guilty. I mean, it wasn't a trial. I mean, these stipulated facts trials are not trials. They're not contested. There's no evidentiary. There's no cross-examination. They just take the facts as they see them. So with the admission and the initial the admission by the defendant and the initial statements by the victim in the case, I'm 99.99% confident that this judge took the affidavit, which was obtained by defense counsel, with a grain of salt. But what we do have here is we have a waiver of a jury trial and a list of the consequences that are not accurate. So even despite whatever you say about whether or not this is the functional equivalent or not, it seems to me that the waiver is inadequate, and the colloquy that we have here is inaccurate. And when you have an inaccurate waiver, you don't have a knowing and voluntary waiver of your right to a jury trial.
How do we know that this warning or statement about consequences is inaccurate? I mean, how do we know from this record?
Well, you know what, by the pre-sentence investigation that Mr. Zeffirino was not a citizen of this country, and he was later taken into ICE custody.
Is that in the record?
I don't believe so. I mean, that might be having something that would have to be fleshed out in terms of consequences. But
I mean, he was a stay of adjudication, it seems to me, could have different consequences than a guilty plea.
Well, you have a finding of guilt, though. That's the problem.
You have an adjudication that someone is guilty of the offense, but I'm not sure if you have an adjudication. It's a stay of adjudication. You have a finding of guilt, but adjudication is stayed, and presumably, was there an agreement that the case would be dismissed at a certain point in time?
I believe the agreement, you successfully complete probation after 3 years, and the natural consequence of that would be that the case would be dismissed, and then you could ostensibly expunge it from your record. However, the finding alone, and it's never explored by this defense counsel, the finding alone by the court, even without the stay of adjudication, is sufficient for deportation.
How do we know that? I mean, you haven't briefed that point, and I don't know that off the top of my head. So, all of which, I mean, my next question, I guess, is just we have no information about defense counsel's thoughts or about tactics and strategy. You know why, or whether there was any communication between the counsel and the defendant. Off the record, right?
That's true. And let's say Mr. Zeffirino was a citizen. I probably would have handled the case exactly the same way, because that's an excellent result. But he's not, and that's why we're here.
But it still seems like there's a lot of unknowns about what are the adverse collateral consequences arising from a stay of adjudication to this kind of a charge.
Right. I know it because I've lived the case, but there's nothing in the record that is illustrative of what you just said.
How do we know from the record that that's the reason that he was deported?
Well, he hasn't been deported.
Well,
he was taken into ICE custody.
How do we know that's the reason?
We don't. All we know is, and we can infer it. We can infer that there would be some immigration consequences because he is not a citizen, and we know that by looking at the pre-sentence investigation, which I included with my brief.
But there's nothing in the record that would indicate that the reason that he was detained by ICE was because of the...
Right, I tried hard to find something that I could put in the record, and so the only way to do that is with post-conviction relief, I suppose.
Mr. Rivers, is there any case law anywhere in the country you can point us to which would come close to saying, yes, we should basically have the Padilla requirements on defense counsel apply in this situation?
I looked hard. No. So, and that's all I have, unless you all have any other questions.
I had one question referring to your brief. I'm looking at page 7 of your brief, sort of in the middle of the page. The first sentence of part 2. Is denied effective assistance because a competent attorney familiar with immigration law would have been able to engineer a plea agreement which would not have negatively impacted his immigration status. I mean, that gives me the impression that even though he didn't plead guilty, you're saying that would have been the better result, and I don't understand that.
I'm sorry, you said on page 7?
Right.
I see.
Yeah, the first sentence of part 2. It sounds like the result that you're saying should have that a competent attorney should have arrived at or sought would be a plea agreement, not a court trial, and a plea agreement with less of an impact on his immigration status. And that seems counterintuitive.
Well, if he would have gotten a continuance for dismissal, for example, that would have been, there wouldn't have been any admission, and there wouldn't have been any finding of guilt. So, and Mr. Zettler will get up here and say there's no way we would have ever done that. So, but what my complaint is that it just is never even addressed. You don't even have any kind of inquiry by the court or statement by the defense attorney with Mr. Zeferino Sanchez that about his immigration status and how this might affect it. And it seems to me that, you know, when you have the functional equivalent of a guilty plea, that there should be more protections in place. If you look at the language that they use in Padilla, preserving a client's right to remain in the United States may be more important in to the client than a potential jail sentence. And I think that's the case here.
Okay.
Thank you.
It appears there are no further questions. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal after Mr. Zettler has argued.
May it please the court. My name is Todd Zettler. I represent respondent, the state of Minnesota. And there is no case law anywhere in the country that supports what he's asking the court to do today. The only case law in the country is to the contrary and cited in my brief. This was not the functional equivalent of a guilty plea. This was a stipulated facts trial. And there are no Padilla warnings for a trial. So he was handled entirely appropriately, and he negotiated a fantastic deal, the defense attorney did in the district court. So there's absolutely no support for he should have gotten a better deal. Getting a stay of adjudication on a crim sex is rather incredible. So there's no evidence that anything better could have or would have been negotiated. So I will rely mainly on my brief unless the court has any questions.
Seems like what might have been most disadvantageous for him was not a court trial instead of a jury trial, but stipulating to the state's evidence instead of contesting the evidence and putting on a defense of some kind. That's not exactly what's being argued, I don't think. I think that the argument has more to do with, well, maybe it has to do with everything, all the circumstances. But I mean, aren't there some circumstances where the existing case law about ineffective assistance could result in a finding of ineffectiveness by failing to put the state to its burden of proof rather than simply, well, or I should say by failing to put in any contrary evidence or to test the evidence in cross-examination rather than to stipulate to it as defendant.
Sure, and there would be a lot of, oh, I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to cut you off. There would be a lot of case law discussing the difference between a court trial and a jury trial and the waivers that have to happen. Those all happened here. That was followed. There's no claim that that wasn't done appropriately. So he properly and appropriately waived a jury trial in favor of the court trial. Defense counsel is not claiming here that there was anything inappropriately done in that regard. And there were clear advantages for him proceeding this way. He was not subject to cross-examination, so he was able to put his statement before the district court without having to get on the stand and testify. So there are reasons why a stipulated facts trial would be advantageous and preferable. So the claim here today is not that this defendant inappropriately waived his jury trial. The claim is that this court should make some new law and find that a stipulated facts court trial is equivalent to a guilty plea, and therefore the Padilla warnings should apply. And for that, there is no law supporting that, and it is, in fact, to the contrary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zettler. Mr. Rivers, you have an opportunity for rebuttal if you wish.
I've said my piece.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for being present and timely under less than ideal circumstances. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days as required by law.